All right, so I'm coming at it from a slightly different angle, okay? So years ago, I figured out I'm not a whole lot of good in production side. I'm much better at killing things than I am at producing them. And so my goal is always to team up with somebody in the production side so that I can do the post-harvest aspects, not have to grow the crop or try to grow the crop myself. And over time, this has evolved into a lot of very large projects with a lot of data collection. And trying to figure out ways to maximize data collection and get a little bit more out of it, particularly a benefit for both the production people and also from the post-harvest side, when you have limited faculty, limited availability of labor. So, you know, I always get frustrated with this. Long ago, we sat around, and back when phytochemicals became the big thing, and I had a student or a person in my lab who was going back to school, and she was working on rats. And it was a really big revelation to me to find out that when it comes to animal work, you don't just grow the animal and harvest it. You already have it pieced out long before you even start. You know, you say, okay, somebody wants the brain, somebody wants the bones. You know, this, and it, we thought, well, wow, we don't do that in plant science a whole lot. You know, we grow it and we throw it away, we grow it and do the yields and we don't know what to do with it. And maybe it's time to rethink that philosophy a little bit more, especially for cost. And so what do we do here, you know? And it may not be that you have somebody that you can team up with. So what are you going to do when you've got all this yield sitting here and you've got to do something with it? Now, of course, I'd love to just take it and do something else with it, but maybe I'm not around. By far the most common thing that I see out there that people do, because these are simple things to do and relatively easy to do, is soluble solids content. This is many times used as an overall indicator of sweetness. Not always accurately. It doesn't work on sweet corn, for instance, but it's a very simple technique to use. Color is very common, especially with all the advent of colorimeters, which generate huge amounts of data in a very short time. And firmness, we all want some sort of handle on firmness, and there's new firmness technologies that are much quicker than the old Instron used to be 20 years ago. So the other things with storage, on the storage side of it, is weight loss. This is one that tends to get forgotten about. Firmness, color, soluble solids, pH and acidity are also changing. These are not so much standing there watching you burette anymore. Marketable appearance is very critical. And then also gas measurement, ethylene and carbon dioxide still come up into it. This is mature science. It's no longer about discovery science. It's about how to apply these things in your evaluations. Phytochemical measurements. Okay, so this is the newest thing, right? Everybody wants to demonstrate a functional food, and there's been a lot of changes in this area just in the last 5 years. So when the advent of this was probably 10 or 15 years ago, total phenolic content, total anthocyanin content, these have been around for a long time in the wine industry. Suddenly, the people in the produce area said, oh, wow, these really fit well for what we're trying to look at for functional food and what it might work on. Antioxidant tests became very popular, FRAP, DPPH, ORAC, and tests like that. But then about 5 years ago, the people that are involved more with animal studies and the people studies came back and said, these tests really don't relate to anything that happens in the body. And so that kind of spun us people around, the people on the plant side around a little bit, going, well, we've done a lot of work with a lot of data, and how are we going to use this for what we need it to use it for? And there's still relevance for both the phenolic content and anthocyanin content. And even the FRAP and DPPH can be used to piece out what's going on in the plant itself. Whether it relates to what's going on in the body is a different matter, but it may be very useful for breeders. Chlorophyll health, the fluorescence is used specifically for leafy greens and things like, used a lot in apples and also in broccoli. Vitamin C content is something that's being used more and more commonly because this is one of the few antioxidant tests that does seem to have an effect. You see it in a number of ways. You know, it might be a stress response or it might be something to do with post-harvest. Beta-carotene and total carotenoids can be assayed relatively simply and relatively cheaply. So I'm gonna go through some very much hands-on types of things. The soluble solids, by far my favorite. tool is a digital refractometer, not the old hold it to your eye and trying to make the light shine through. And the older you get, the more you want the digital. And these come in many forms, and they are, it's not just sugars. You could have acids in there. You could have water-soluble polysaccharides. Amino acids and anthocyanins has also been shown to relate to that. So you have to have a little bit of a grain of knowing what it is. Like if it's watermelon, it's probably going to be 90% sugars. But that may not apply to something like strawberry. It may only be 70% of the sugars in strawberry. So you kind of have to know your crop a little bit. But it's a wonderful indicator, a really fast indicator of what might be going on with the crop. We tried it years ago with sweet corn and found it really fast. It doesn't work. If you put sweet corn juice on a refractometer, you get a reading of 50. And that means you got water-soluble polysaccharides, nothing to do with sugars. So you always have to be careful about that before you jump into it. And generally what I choose is a refractometer goes from 0 to 32% because you can have it go up to about 80%, but that's more applicable to food science where you're looking at jellies and jams and things with a high sugar content. There's also, I was researching trying to put together kits for people, you know, to do quick assays for growers. I found out that there's a refractometer that sold for a mere $100 on Amazon. It turns out it's made in North Carolina. And it's big. It's probably four times the size of this refractometer here. But for $100, it saves a lot of eyesight. Colorimeters. Okay, so there's a couple different kinds. There's a bench type here. This is a Hunter, where you put your product right here at the entrance, and you measure reflectance. And this is great, and you can get your whole color scheme right here. It's all software driven now, wonderful. But after 6 years of using this, I still went back when I had the chance. I bought the handheld Konica Minolta one. One thing I'd never seen done before was you can turn it on its head and measure color this way, which I thought was great. Saves on arms. But the difference between them is this one is, of course, considerably more expensive. This one's much more portable. But they both generate tons of data, right? And you've got to do a little bit of reading and a little bit of training on color and what it means and how you relate to it. But most importantly of all, I still see this. People will give me big sets of data with color values, and they have no clue what it means. And you've got to be able to relate it back. You know, if you have an A value of 26, where are you in the red zone? And the only way you can do that really is via visual rating. Okay, so orange might be 20, and dark red might be 30. You've got to keep some sort of visual scale going at the same time, a visual ranking. Chlorophyll meters, SPAD. How many people have used a SPAD right now? Yeah, a lot of people do. Very useful, useful both in the field, you know, to measure your chlorophyll content. I use it in the lab occasionally, like I was looking at zucchini peel and I didn't want to have to try and isolate chlorophyll, so I was taking really thin peel strips and putting on the SPAD meter to see what my chlorophyll reading was. Runs about $2,000 to $3,000, but a very useful tool to use. All right, firmness is one that is just all over the place, and we've done an awful lot of we bought a lot of machines over the years trying to figure out what would work. You know, we started with texture analyzer, and that thing took about 3 hours to do 10 samples, so that wasn't very effective for what we were trying to do at the time. And then we had old devices out there. You know, the old Chatillon system and the old Fiji puncture system. But there's better things out there now. This unit right here costs about $1,500, which sounds like a lot, but it gives you electronic download. And you can get peak force with it, peak compression on this one. And you can use it, you can buy different modules for weight. So, I mean, in my lab, I'm running anything from a raspberry to an apple. And that's anywhere from less than a pound to 30 pounds of pressure. And one module will not do it all. So we have several of these with different modules attached. And what the nice thing is, we can run a cable right to our Excel file and download the data directly, so we don't have to write it down. And it's a drill press, so that, you know, you still have to use the force to bring it down with your hand, but we saved a lot of time overall. And it does a good job, at least, of differentiating among ripeness stages. Maybe it's not so good for cultivar, but definitely for ripeness. This is a newer machine. This came from QA Supplies. We bought it this year. And we're trying to get, we still haven't gotten it to work with raspberries, but it gives you different probe sizes. It's completely electronic. You can go up and down with the press of a button, no more pushing or, you know, any kind of leverage whatsoever. Again, it's a direct download of the data. So you have your firmness data, and it's right there, and you can very rapidly, you can do a lot of samples here. You know, we can buzz through 100 samples in about an hour. So much more functional than the old days. Again, another thing to remember for this, like I said, I work a lot on small fruits, so we don't have to worry so much about removing peel. However, we do have to know a little bit about the type of texture we're looking at so we can figure out what kind of peak force we want to use. Because with berries, they tend to be more of a giving or a yield, whereas an apple is a crunch, and that has a different type of probe system. And then also, you have to remove the peel for the apple and peach so that you're measuring the flesh. There's another type of system I didn't put on here. It's deflection. It's non-destructive. And it runs by a table that spins. It's got a round table that spins around, and you basically are hitting it with a probe. Bing, 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 bing. It's very useful for blueberry and cherry tomato. And the nice thing is it's not destructive, unlike the compression, which is going to, you know, one sample, that's it. Subjective ratings. When it comes to post-harvest, there's still a lot of subjective rating in there. And it's all about these days, what I've been able to finally realize is that it's much easier to train people now because it's so easy to make a video and it's so easy to use digital photography. You know, we can have a record now. And so when we go to train people every year, we used to have to try and figure out, well, what is our, you know, if we're training somebody for softness, what is it? You know, what latex ball are we going to use to train people for what is a soft fruit? And now it's much easier to go onto a video and explain it and go through and train people. Their scales, I've always been very flexible about the scales. Post-harvest people will say it should be from 0 to 9 and 1 to 9, and I'm like, whatever works in the lab. Mostly people have trouble in the middle of the range, like around 3, and what that is. So we're like, okay, I personally can't remember numbers till 9, so I do 0 to 5, and then it's like, if it's in the middle, it might be 2.5 or 3, and you can draw a linear line and convert those over to 9 if you want to. Yes, no is a very common one for me. Yes, it has mold. No, it doesn't have mold. Very simple. And it's usually much better if you have pretty strong differences that you can see easily. And you can do it as non-destructive. Okay, you've got stuff you're following over time. Like I might have 10 fruit in an egg carton and I want to see, well, today it's got mold, tomorrow it's got more mold or something like that. It can be non-destructive. Another one we've been playing with, we're trying to do stuff that can easily be translated so a grower can do it if they're interested, or an extension person who's trying to train growers or show people what to look for. This is a lot of what we like to do, or I like to do. Peach browning is one of the ones I've been working on. We're trying to evaluate our varieties in North Carolina to see what's going on with browning. So what we did was a very simple test. We cut the peaches, but they rarely show browning for us. So what we do is we give them the really acid test, which is we puree the heck out of them, and then we let them sit at room temperature for about 4 hours and measure the color. We have a visual rating system we developed digitally. We do a digital, it's like this is a 5 right here for browning, and this is a 0 for browning. And then we can also run them qualitatively in our colorimeter to see what our values are. We did the same thing with squash puree, or winter squash, where we're interested in the yellowness of them and relative to a cultivar trial that we're doing. The next step, when we talk about linking cultivar trials, this is one of them. We're trying to link it to health and see what's going on nutrition-wise. And then also in strawberry is always fun because you have a lot of pieces in a strawberry. You've got the gloss level of the fruit. You've got the calyx. Is it green? Is it brown? Is it shriveled? Is it not shriveled? And go on and on. Then you can do the internal part if you're still not tired of strawberries. You can cut them open and start looking at the cavity and see if it's big or not. They do this for sensory where I am. and also how red it is. You know, obviously this is a nice North Carolina selection, and this would be something from the store. So this is the sort of thing that you're looking for relative to your market. Weight loss is one that I review a lot of papers in post-harvest, and this one is just not done very much anymore, and I don't know why. I think people make assumptions, and it's really frustrating to me to see somebody doing a phytochemical analysis, but they didn't bother to weigh their fruit, and it's on a fresh weight basis. Very simple to do, and very, very cheap. It used to be that a scale like this would cost you $5,000 to $7,000. This was about $1,600. And the nice part is it hooks into the computer, so you put it on there, you press a button, you've got automatic weight data. No more typing in, no more writing down. And you can get very good scales to one decimal place for $100 or less on the market. There was one I found as a jeweler scale, it was $6 and fit in your pocket. And I mean, it's just incredible to me how portable everything is now. And it's also very useful for indicating that you might have a problem. You know, we always have a cutoff. If it's got 3% weight loss, then it's time to rate. So we're always careful about our weight loss. pH and titratable acidity. Again, this one has a lot of portable versions now with all the environmental quality work. This has really opened up the market on pH electrodes and robust pH electrodes. No more sitting and standing in the lab with your pH electrodes over here worrying about the things going bad on you. You can put them in your pocket and go out anywhere you want to. We use them right in the field on watermelon if we have to. And you have many versions that are out there. We use a stainless steel probe type, this one down here. We like it because we can jab it into anything. You know, it's very robust. So we can stick it into a cantaloupe and record the readings. Titratable acidity is measuring the buffering ability of produce. This is very common in fruits, of course. And the old days, you did it with a burette. Still do it with a burette. And you drip, 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 drip. That was like, to me, the most painful thing in the lab, because you could go to sleep just trying to do one sample, right? Especially if you have a strawberry, it takes 25 mils of sodium hydroxide. Nowadays, they have automated ones. There's a one sample size. I have a 12 sample place titrometer, and it's worth every penny of it. This one's expensive. It's running about $15,000, but it saves me that every year in labor. And the nice thing is we go from doing maybe 20 samples a day to 60 samples a day. Gas measurement. Okay, again, this is something that's almost disappeared from most laboratories now, particularly in post-harvest. Still a very useful piece of equipment. You can pick these up. Shimadzu still sells a lot of these. You can get a very simple version for $8,000, anywhere up to $30,000, depending on how many detectors you want on it. And then there's also handheld devices, the old Kitayoyo system, that are considerably less expensive, that can still give you a pretty good idea of what either ethylene or CO2, mostly CO2, can be. And also, I believe some of the LICOR things that are used for photosynthesis will do a pretty decent job of CO2 on your fruit or your vegetable when it comes into the lab. I haven't tried it, but I've been reading up on it. So antioxidants. Okay, I mentioned that earlier that a lot of these quick tests have lost favor as indicators. But they're still very useful for certain, particularly for both cultivar trials and for breeders, I think. Particularly for certain crops. Like, for instance, if you're doing total anthocyanins, when it comes down to a strawberry or a blackberry, the major pigments in those are going to be in your total anthocyanin. Like, blackberry is almost all cyanidin-3 glucoside. You don't have to do HPLC on a blackberry if you're doing a breeding trial to know what you've got. You can just do a total anthocyanin test. So it pays to know your crop again. It's worthwhile doing a quick literature search to find out, if you're interested in doing these tests, how useful is it going to be as an indicator. These are going to require access. All of these tests, however, are going to require access to a spectrophotometer. It doesn't have to be an expensive one. There's still the old ones kicking around here. Microplate readers are great because they'll save you a lot of time and a lot of waste. These are all done with visible wavelengths. So they're all colorimetrics, essentially. Okay. Other tests that are done, carotenoids, beta-carotene, lycopene, and chlorophyll can be done by spectrophotometer depending on the crop. Vitamin C can be done by spec, but I highly recommend doing HPLC if you have access. It will save you a lot of aggravation. The other thing I wanted to check in, wanted people to note here is homogenization. Particle size is everything, especially in antioxidant tests. If you can get we use a Polytron. This is an $8,000 machine. But we found that if you have a Ninja, go down to Sam's and buy yourself a $50 Ninja, or a Vitamix, which is about $600. These give a superb particle size, a fraction of the cost of a Polytron. The only problem is they usually require a slightly bigger sample size. So in summary, the BRICS, or soluble solids content, is the most common measure used, and in some crops is a great reflection of the sugars. The firmness testers have much cheaper and faster newer versions that will electronically download, and they can be customized depending on your crop. Colorimeters generate lots of data, but you have to be careful when you use these to follow what's going on visually. Subjective ratings can be very effective, especially if paired with digital photos for training and reference. And pH meters can be used as handheld. Okay, and then total phenolics and total monomeric anthocyanin content can be good screening tools. I will stop there since we're out of time. He's coming to get me.
One question for Penny. I know Penny will be around to answer questions later on.
Yeah.
Maybe okay. We move on then.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Penny. A lot of wonderful information.